Silent Waves contains material that may be distressing for some listeners. If any of the content is triggering for you, please refer to the support organisations in our show notes. Act 4.
With my father gone, my heart was broken. I would call his phone again and again just to hear his voice on his answering machine. For 20 seconds at a time, I'd forget he was no longer here. At least there was another angel in the sky. That's what I told myself, guiding me from above, somehow holy now. I had this overwhelming feeling that he had access to my mind. I was convinced he knew about Leonardo. People were starting to see a side of me that hadn't existed before, and it terrified me to feel like I was losing my grip.
But obviously things really started to take a bad turn when your dad was very ill and there was a lot of uncertainty around that.
This is Sasha, one of my closest friends at the time.
When he went missing, when we didn't know where he was, that was when I felt there was a lot of distance between us and I didn't obviously know what was going through your head and just felt really sad for you, I guess, about all of this that was going on. It was just a really sad time, I guess, of watching you and feeling like it was watching somebody drowning and not knowing how to help them or save them, and just observing somebody going through hell.
My name is Raquel O'Brien and this is Silent Waves. After my father's death, I was sent to counselling. In the sessions, I was urged to talk about the loss of my dad. But all I wanted was to tell someone, anyone, about Leonardo.
So I was trying to learn some shamanic arts. So
as a 14-year-old boy, yes.
Matt, my younger brother, seemed like he was holding it together.
The night before, I did a little healing on myself where I saw a lot of things through my mind's eye, and then all of a sudden as I'm coming out of the healing, I got like an electrical spark in my right brood finger.
Yeah, I can see it.
And it was the most weird thing. I didn't touch anything, but it left a red mark in the middle of my brood finger. So if I look back on it now, I realize I was getting charged up with some energy to pass on to you. I was unbeknownst to me at the time. So I decided to do a healing with you the next day. We did it. I felt a lot of tension in your heart. Tried to go into that, release it a little bit, ran some energy flow through you. And then at the end of it, you were bawling. I grabbed your hand at the end of it. I was like, okay, is there anyone in the universe got any messages for Raquel? I used to be able to hear clairaudiently. So what would happen is white noise would come in, then I'd hear a voice, then white noise would come out, and then that was like transmission over, essentially. I heard Ralph's voice being like, it's okay, it's all right, my sweetie, I'm here for you. Everything's going to be okay. But you kept crying, and then next day I wake up and you're in bed with Mum, crying, bawling your eyes out. Mum's stressing out. Mum's like, Athy, you have to be careful, you know, doing these healings, you could have brought some dark energy in. I was like, felt good at the time. Everything felt cool. Don't think I got her possessed. Yeah, then, you know, shit hit the fan.
You said, okay, you better sit down because what I'm going to tell you. And I said, what else now? Because what else can be? And I thought, she's pregnant, drugs. I never thought. I said, okay, what else? And then you said, Mom, I was sexually abused by Leonardo. And then I said, what? Kept hugging and it was just.
Did I tell you that? Did I tell you initially that he did rape me?
No, he never told me anything.
Yeah. Do you think he knew in that moment that he did?
Yeah.
Back then, it didn't cross my mind how it would have felt for my mum to hear her daughter had been abused by her nephew.
I felt completely numb. I felt completely useless. I felt completely powerless. I felt completely betrayed.
The next day, we were on a flight to Melbourne. My older brother, Heredia, had organised it. At this point, Matt still had no idea what was going on.
Gabriel calls me, he's like, Matt, stuff just happened. You find out when you get to Melbourne. That's it, essentially. You're catching a flight tomorrow. I was like, what the fuck happened? I'm thinking it's all to do with Dad. I'm like, oh, fuck, dude's at it again. So I catch a flight. You're crying in the arms of Mum. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah, like, I'm not to ask questions. I'm just to be like, yeah, I'm going to Melbourne. Don't know why. Tell my friends, yeah, I'm going to Melbourne. Don't know why. Just doing it because that's what, you know, the bosses say.
When they told you, did you feel anger? Did you feel sadness? Did you feel like you knew it all along?
I think I knew it all along. I was just like, it wasn't as surprising because Ralph came out of nowhere. This was like, oh yeah, I had thought that before. Now it's come to light and it's fucked, but at least we can do something about it now.
Yeah.
At least now we're going to finally kick into gear. So in terms of processing it, I think I'd processed the shock element, which everyone else was copying at that stage already because I was like, I saw that fucking child porn. I saw him take you into our room, into his room when I was sleeping in there. You know, I'd already speculated about all this and I'd already had that shock where I was like shaken.
Despite having broken my silence, I couldn't shake the feeling that it was all my fault.
Oh, you rocked. You knocked about. Yeah, that was a steady, I don't know, decline in your well-being there. I remember many a times you would be slitting your wrists. I'd have to kick in doors to get you out. You'd just go walk about. You'd send a message to everyone being like, that's it, I'm out. I'm going to jump off this bridge. I'd go running around the streets of South Yarra trying to find you. You and Mum used to have some crazy fights.
So would you say that Mum and my relationship started deteriorating from that point?
I think so. Yeah, and on the contrary, you and my relationship got a whole lot stronger.
After discussing it with my family, I decided I would press charges against Leonardo. I was going to court, and Matt would be a witness in my case. At the end of 2009, Mum, Matt and I relocated to Melbourne. We were all glad to get away from Perth. I needed distance from Leonardo, and Mum was still reeling from the aftermath of financial ruin that Dad had left her in. We found a home and I started at a new school. My trial was set for April 2011. I prepared for my case in secret. I didn't want anyone in my new life to know my past. At school, I appeared fine. But as soon as I got home, I was a complete wreck. I aimed my rage and my pain towards Mum. I blamed her.
Your behaviour, of course, was related to what you had to go through. But at the same time, I was going through a lot. So there are certain things that you used to say, like, you are nothing. You know, if it was not for Dad, you wouldn't be here. You know, like, your nephew did that to me. And I was the one that I had to cope with the anger because only a mother has unconditional love. So I knew I had to put up with your anger.
And at this point, your relationship goes crazy.
The worst it has ever been.
You guys are fighting. Just remember this real distinct moment because I think you and Mum were having a little punch on and you're in the corner just fuming. I was like, you just wanted to punch something or something. You wanted to punch Mum. So I put my face out in front of you. I was like, punch me. punch me, take it out on me, come on, fucking punch me. You uppercutted me. And I was like, but I copped it. Then I looked at you again, come on, fucking hit me again. You hit me again. And I was like, see what I'll do for you? And then you broke down crying. And I was like, then I gave you a hug. It was like the breakthrough. I remember you chipped my front tooth.
God, I don't know. That's not funny.
No, it's fun. No, but that's how desperate it was. That's how desperate it was.
Blocked that out.
But there was definitely a lot of tension there. And it was like, you can fucking take it all out on me physically. That's all sweet, but let's get through this. That was when you and I were just like, yo, we got this. We're in this together.
In December 2010, only a few months before my trial, my mum fell in love. She'd found someone to support her through her depression. It was the first time I'd seen my mum with a man other than my father. She was consumed by him. He was someone I now know she not only needed, but deserved. But I didn't see it at the time. All I saw was betrayal. Because of this, Mum and I were barely speaking. And then one day, Matt, Mum and I were on a plane to Perth. The trial was on the other side. I had recently turned 18. Going into court, I had my mantra. Just say the truth, Raquel. The judge deemed me a vulnerable witness. Therefore, I was to testify via CCTV live feed into the courtroom. I was escorted into a small room where I was met by a support worker. She had a kind face and handed me a blue stress ball as I entered. I sat down next to her before an enormous TV screen and started to shake. It was only this year that I obtained the transcripts from my trial. I'd blocked it out. As I read through, I remembered it all. My lawyer asked me a series of questions about where I lived, my age, and my relatives. It was easy enough. He then asked if I had a cousin by the name of Leonardo. Yes.
Yes.
I went to court thinking I would have the opportunity to tell my story.
Witnesses in a criminal trial are asked to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
This is Dr. Vivian Waller, Principal Solicitor of Waller Legal, representing sexual assault survivors for 22 years.
But more often than not, they never get the opportunity to tell their whole history or to give the full picture about what has happened. The evidence unfolds, they only have to answer like specific questions that are asked of them. They're told to answer the question yes or no. They're cross-examined at length.
Reading through the transcripts, I remembered how I felt knowing that he was out there, Leonardo, looking at me. My lawyer asked about the way that Leonardo groomed me, yet that wasn't the term used. Cariño, the caressing. I admitted that when he caressed me, it felt nice. It hurt imagining the jury's thoughts, their judgments, thinking that I was asking for it. Having to explain my sexual abuse in graphic detail to a courtroom full of strangers was torture. As I read through my court transcripts, I could feel my shame seeping into the proceedings. I had to recall the time that Leonardo asked me to perform oral sex. This is a reenactment from my court transcripts. He left and I just cried.
How long did you cry for?
The whole night.
And why did you cry?
Because I hated myself. At the time, I did not understand how the Australian court system operates. I was warned that cross-examination wasn't going to be easy, but nothing could have prepared me for what followed.
I mean, I think we should pick up on these issues about the legal system. Because the same tactics of power and control that are used by abusers often are re-experienced by children when they hit the court system.
Here's academic Kathy Humphreys. She's the Professor of Social Work at the University of Melbourne.
The child or the young person experiences this as trying to break them. and trying to get them to renege on their story. So the number of times that victims, you know, very young children are accused of lying is part of what's used against them. So it doesn't seem to be delivering justice. What it was seen to be delivering was more assault. And I don't think it's got that much better.
Leonardo pleaded not guilty. His lawyer's job was to prove that.
Can I just check some dates in which you're telling us this all happened?
Already I'm considered to be lying. What followed was a series of laborious questions about the time frame of events. When my mother left for Brazil, when she returned, when my cousin moved out of our home, and when my father died. I feel it's unrealistic to expect children to remember specific dates from many years ago, let alone when they've been traumatized. His questions were all surrounding the time and date of events, some of which I wasn't even present for. I started saying, "I don't know," a lot. And unlike my lawyer, he never offered me a break.
There needs to be an understanding about the fact that people who've experienced repeated trauma are highly allergic to stressful situations.
This is Kathy Kazelman, survivor of familial sexual abuse and president of the Blue Knot Foundation. It's a national organisation that works to improve the lives of Australian adults who've experienced childhood trauma.
But what that means is that the logical part of the brain goes offline. So people go into a reactive mode. The ability to verbalise and think is often lost precisely in that situation of high stress in a cross-examination situation.
Back to my cross-examination.
And Leonardo would pick you up from parties?
I can't remember him picking me up from parties.
Did he talk to you and express concern about the fact that you were drinking too much?
Once he did, yeah.
Right. And he doesn't drink, does he?
No, he doesn't. This was the moment the defence team attacked my character by insinuating I was a deviant teenager. Here's Dr. Vivian Waller again.
It doesn't take much of a performance to plant the seed of doubt in the jury's mind. They don't have to disprove the whole story. They just have to plant seeds of doubt in the juror's mind that somehow the person who is complaining of being sexually abused is an unreliable witness. And it might be that, 98% of the account given stands up to scrutiny and rigorous cross-examination. So really what it means is the whole focus of the defence is the destruction of the credibility of the person who is complaining of being sexually abused.
The cross-examiner, they're honing in on the person's vulnerabilities and they're exploiting their vulnerabilities, which I think is utterly shameful.
This is renowned Victorian lawyer Dr. Judy Corden, who represents victims of institutional child abuse.
When you already know that that person is vulnerable, to wittingly go in there and exploit that vulnerability yet again is very harmful. It's very harmful indeed. It's psychiatrically harmful for the survivor.
My testimony was dismissed at various times.
Now, I'll put it to you that at no time over this period of time did Leonardo ever touch you inappropriately.
He did.
That he never touched your breasts, that he never touched your vagina, that he never touched you inappropriately at all.
He did, and I'm not lying.
The courts are based on centuries of tradition and they're well-established, long-held rules around evidence that don't take account of the difficulties that you describe.
Graham Taylor is a specialised trauma psychologist. We spoke of the re-traumatisation of survivors through the court process.
Yeah, one of the reasons why many victims don't speak up is because speaking up in itself is traumatic. It's bad enough to not be believed, but it's worse to be attacked, to be told by a clever QC that you must be lying.
This is academic Kathy Humphreys.
We somehow have distorted the justice system, so-called, to make it an unequal system where it's all about the rights of the defendant rather than the rights of the victim. It's not experienced as a fair system.
Defence referred to the time in the car when my dad had asked me if anything happened between Leonardo and I. That was the time that I had said no. I lied.
Never mind about that. Is that what you said to your father?
Yeah. Yeah. I conceded. Cross-examination finished soon after. The judge then asked my lawyer if he had any more questions.
Just one matter, Your Honour.
He too referred to the moment in the car where my dad asked me about Leonardo.
Why did you say that to your dad?
Because I couldn't admit to it. Because I felt like I was a terrible person and I'm so ashamed, even still.
Ashamed of what?
That I let what happened happen and I didn't stop it.
Thank you, Your Honour. That's the evidence of this witness.
If the criminal justice system could come to grips with trauma-informed practice.
This is Dr. Vivian Waller.
That is, understanding that an interaction with the legal system, an interaction with a person in position of authority can be deeply triggering for someone, for example, who's been sexually abused as a child. And if we regard the court genuinely as attempting to uncover all the relevant facts and come to the truth of the matter, we really should be considering bringing to those processes what we have learned about the psychiatric consequences of the harm, particularly of children.
We must enforce that all legal practitioners in child abuse cases are trauma-informed. My younger brother, Matt, was my witness. As soon as I had testified, it was his turn. He was ushered into the same room.
Do you remember the state I was in, how traumatised I
was? Yeah, so traumatised. Yeah, you were, like, shaking. This dude's pretty much discounted your whole story, which touches on a whole lot of issues that I have with the legal system. Court doesn't stop. Court's like, all right, bring in the next. So I kind of saw you, it was like just a passing by, like, oh, she's fucked. This is really, really emotional. Matt, you're up. Okay. Walk into that room. It's already really heavy because a lot of, you know, energy has been spilt in there. This is it. It's now or never.
We both got cross-examined by the same lawyer. We both had the same reaction to him.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me what you remember him saying when he tried to disprove your story?
I was like, my rooms are getting renovated. Went into the... I slept on a futon, which was my bed, in that we'd moved to Leonardo's room. In the middle of the night, I woke up to see Leonardo leading Raquel into bedroom. I saw it. I was really tired. I thought it was a little bit weird, but then I fell back asleep. So I said that, just gave him like the facts of it. And then fucking that douchebag of a lawyer is like, Matthew, I put it to you that Leonardo brought Raquel into your room and you all played board games and you went to sleep. I'm like, mate, are you having a laugh? Like, I was like, no, that did not happen. I remember the lawyers or whatever saying you got to be convincing. So I was thinking I got to be convincing, but I actually felt really convincing because I was like, that is horse shit.
All of a sudden, it was over. We'd all testified. Despite this, I still left feeling like I hadn't gained any power over what had happened to me. We were at the airport about to leave for Melbourne. And I was looking forward to getting on with my life, blocking out that experience. And then Mum got a call. The verdict was in. Guilty. That's all I heard. This year, when I got my court transcripts, I was able to see my cousin's convictions, what parts of my testimony got my case over the line.
So I wanted to read you something before we go in, something you haven't heard before, mm-hmm. and it's the sentencing transcript. So it's what the judge gave down to Leonardo. And so basically, Leonardo was convicted of 4 counts and he was charged at the moment at where he was indicted, sorry, for 18. So there were 18 counts against him and he was charged for 4 of those accounts. And that amounted to a 3-year sentence.
Okay.
So there were counts three and four are you. So that's you. And the judge says, these 2 accounts occurred while the child's mother was in Brazil and her younger brother was sleeping in your room because his bedroom was being renovated. There was support for the child's evidence in the evidence led at trial from her brother. I find that he was a credible and reliable witness, and I'm satisfied beyond reasonable doubt based on his evidence that on the occasion when he was sleeping in your bedroom, he woke up to see you leading his sister into the bedroom, and then he saw his sister get onto your bed. He then went back to sleep. I find that you did, while the brother was sleeping in your room, go to the child's room and got her to come and sleep in your room in the bed with you. You began caressing her and then fingered her again, that is, penetrated her vagina with your fingers, and that's the subject of count 4. You wanted to perform oral sex on her, but she said she did not want to. You then got her hand and put it over your shorts, put your hand over hers and moved it up and down your penis. And that's the subject of count 3. She was worried during this that her brother would wake up, and she ended this by saying good night and going to sleep. So...
fuck. That's heavy.
Well, it is, but it's also thank you, because if it wasn't for your testimony, that's 2 less counts that he would have been charged for.
Yeah, I know.
And they were the, like, they weren't even the worst time.
Yeah, I know, but fuck. As if, yeah, that's massive. Can we have a hug?
Yeah. I love you.
I love you too. That's good. No, it's kind of fucked because, as if, because all through this testimony, like, I stepped into the room. You'd been in the room for like an hour, hour and a half. I was in there for 15 minutes and that's it. And that 15 minutes was enough to get 3 more counts.
Whoa, thank God.
Yeah, I know, right? But like, fuck. I had no idea that was that important.
Knowing that if it wasn't for my brother, my cousin may have walked away free, made me think about survivors who go through the system without any other witness to corroborate their story. When it's one word against another, and all that's needed is a drop of doubt, what chance do they have? After court, I was made to feel like justice had been served. I'd won. 4 counts had put my cousin in prison. I'd hoped the process would heal me. Instead, I was left feeling like I hadn't really won anything at all, disempowered. My cousin, to this day, has never owned up to his crimes. In fact, he appealed twice against his sentence. I returned to Melbourne vowing never to go back to Perth. I'd laid my dad to rest and I'd exposed Leonardo. It was time for me to move on. But someone else's silence needed to be broken. In 2013, my eldest brother Gabriel woke from a dream. He knew our family's darkest secret. Next time on Silent Waves.
I can't even remember exactly how it started, but it would have been in the form of a game.
You don't think. You don't think. You do not think. Do you understand? You don't.
I could tell that there was something off, and there was an awkwardness. It was almost like it was distorted and deformed, and it was very unnatural.
It was just like your body there, your soul is gone.
If you've been enjoying listening to Silent Waves, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review to help spread the message. Silent Waves is created and produced by Raquel O'Brien and me, Georgina Savage, in partnership with Nearly Media. The show is hosted by Raquel, and I'm the editor. Music production by IMXO of Alt Music Group, with audio assistance by Lloyd Richards and Charlie Vonnox. Our graphic design is by Stacey Gougoulis.